Here we go. But we've had hundreds of hundreds. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I am going to. I'm going to be talking a little bit.
I'm losing you now. I can't hear you.
All I want is all that I can be. And maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly, and so was I ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly. And we were born to fly, so was I. But when you live in a world that tells you that you can't, and when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are, in a world that forgets you were born to fly. And we were born to fly. And we were born to fly.
Aloha. Welcome tonight with Celebrate You Radio Show. I am grateful that everyone is here tonight. The show airs every Wednesday night, Celebrate You, 8 Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central Standard Time, 6 Mountain Standard Time, and 5 Pacific Standard Time. I would like to give a special thank you tonight to all of our listeners at USC Radio Productions. Everyone in the chat room, welcome, aloha. And another thank you to all the iTunes listeners. Your support is greatly appreciated. Another special thank you to Leilani Schmidt-Graham for her dedication to the empowerment of humanity. We have a very special show tonight. I am honored to welcome, in just a few minutes, I have a few things to say about him, Herb Stevenson, White, One White Horse Standing. I want to share a few things about him, and then I'm going to tell you a personal story that I have about Herb. But before I get started with that, I'll give you a little bit of information about Herb, and I will tell you, Herb is being very modest, but this is part of who he is. One White Horse Standing has bridged the worlds of business and spiritual healing. He has been a banker, a management consultant, and an indigenous healer. He has published 26 books and is listed in Who's Who in Finance and Industry and Who's Who in American Law. A part of his efforts is to reclaim his Native American Indian heritage, Shawnee and Cherokee. He has been exploring indigenous healing practices. He has a private practice in crystal energy healing, specializing in trauma-related work. He provides workshops around the country upon request. Herb develops ceremonial and healing wands, scepters, and staffs as part of his spiritual practice. You can go to his website at onewhitehorsestanding.com, and you may contact him at herb@onewhitehorsestanding.com. Judy Hansen, that's who I am. You can contact me at www.judyhansen.net and judy@judyhansen.net. I do want to remind everyone at any time that they may call in. Our call-in number is 347-994-3992. Once again, our call-in number is 347-994-3992. Once again, I want to welcome everyone tonight. I am so excited about what Herb is going to be sharing tonight. It touches my heart beyond words. Now, let me tell you, just before I bring Herb on, I have to share with you how I met Herb. 2011, actually, it was New Year's Eve 2011. I was visiting a friend. She wanted me to meet some of her friends. And as I'm talking to her new friends, they were talking about Native American, and they live in Cleveland and all these kind of things. Cleveland, Ohio, as I'm referring to. And so I kept feeling like I needed to start studying the medicine wheel and the indigenous cultures. And back in 1998, I did really go through an extensive training with shaman practices and shaman healing, and started doing shaman work, but I wasn't growing in the area, and I knew that there was so much more I could do, and I kept having visions and dreams about Native American, and that there was an indigenous grandmother with me, and I wasn't for sure why, but I was drawn. So I was giving Herb's name, and I went to his website, and I checked it out, and I started looking around on the websites and thinking, okay, what direction I want to go. Herb is in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm in the Columbus, Ohio area. So I did that, and here it is, New Year's Eve, and I'm supposed to be at a party, but oh no. I just kept reading online and following direction. And that night I had a vision, and I actually saw Herb and didn't know what he looked like other than I did go to his website. And he was at an angle, and he was just sitting there, and he was like waiting, like, okay, if you're open, I'm here. And so from that moment on, animals started appearing, and I was very much aware of some of my animals that work with me, but they were coming, and they were just like coming in groves. And then I saw a white horse come towards me and stand there. Now, I just, you know, I was baffled. But the point of it was that these were all the things that was happening by just learning a little bit about Herb. Well, here it is. New Year's Day goes by, and the next day I decide to make a phone call, and I call Herb. And let me tell you, Herb is not an easy person to get a hold of because he is a really, really busy man. And he answered the phone. And I began telling him why I called him, and I even told him, and as I was telling him about the grandma, my grandmother's spirit, I started crying. I had tears in my throat, you know, it was just like I had a knot in my throat, but tears were welding up in my eyes. And Herb said to me that by what I described, that there was a grandmother with me that was to help me go home. It was a coming home thing, and it felt so right. And all of a sudden, Herb tells me about a workshop that was going to be in Wisconsin. It was the end of January, and I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to pull this off, get the money together, make the time available? And here I don't know Herb. I don't know anybody in Wisconsin. I don't know anybody in Cleveland. And before long, Herb says, you know, you are welcome to stay at our house, him and his wife's house. I am welcome to ride with everybody. And everything fell into place. I contacted Marie in Wisconsin. I reserved my spot. Didn't know anybody. And I have to tell you, if anybody listening has children, I'm telling my children that I am getting in my car in 3 weeks, and I am going to Cleveland. I'm going to Wisconsin. And my oldest daughter, bless her, she says to me, now, Mom, when you get there, you make sure you call me. You don't know any of these people, and they're strangers to you. And I love it because I could hear my own words of all the things I've said to her echo through her words. So I followed my heart, and I am honored in this moment to introduce Herb. Herb, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share my story tonight because I remember it vividly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember me calling you or not, but I did.
I do.
Yes, and I do want to share this too. What I was quite taken by as I listened to you and as you graciously opened your home up, you and your wife's home up, and I met your animals and I met the horses and your zebra and was so fascinated with all your stones and just your land and just all, you know, that we talked about. Just that when we traveled to Wisconsin, and we traveled with wonderful friends of yours that have been a part of your workshops and that are dear friends of yours for many, many years. And going to Wisconsin is that there is a unspoken code of ethics of how you are. And I'm sure you understand this. And it's having integrity and being honest and the loyalty is something that there's only a handful of people that I've met in my life that has a presence about them that is just integrity. Once you're in your energy field, I have to tell you, Herb, it's just integrity. It is honor. It is not talking about things that you're just not ready to clear. You know, basically, you come being your authentic self, and I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. I'm sitting here a little embarrassed because I'm not used to people sharing that much about me, but yes, that is true. I truly believe we all have an obligation to show up and be fully who we are.
I know. And you're not, and the other thing about you is you're not one to go around talking about yourself, and because you are who you are. But I'm talking from the heart of the impact you've had with me and many listeners that will be here tonight, and people that you know, but a lot of people that you don't know yet. So what we're going to do tonight, and I do want to let the everybody know, is that Herb is going to be covering about the medicine wheel. There's a list of things, overviews. We will be taking some commercials. If people want to ask a question, all you do on your phone at any given time, you can call in 347-994-3992. If you're already on the switchboard, because we do have people there, you can just hit the one, and it will put you in the system to let me know that you have a question. So if anyone has any comments or questions, feel free to do that at this time and anytime within the next hour and 45 minutes. So tonight, Herb, I would like for you to begin. Oh, before I've got other things, Herb, that I want people to know, that you do provide men's programs, and you do have a year-long program in Cleveland. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
And can you share a little bit about what the program is about?
Almost everything I do now is based on the medicine wheel. So the spiritual teachings from the Native American is one version. The Natural Passages program, that's called at naturalpassages.com, is a men's version of the medicine wheel. And the two of them, I teach them differently, but the concepts are basically the same. And it's designed to support people to how do you live from a centered place, deeply within yourself. I call it creating the adequate internal authority so that you can live the life that you were always meant to be versus the life that you were always told to be. And so I've been doing the men's program for about 10 years. It'll be the 11th year coming up. And I've been teaching Native American spirituality about 20 years now. So that's some of the background.
And with your men's programs, I think you go through each season, and like you have four major weekends with the men, right?
Yeah, just the same as teaching the medicine wheel, like the ones that you have attended. There's four sessions to go around the wheel, so I do the men's very specifically according to the seasons because they need it for their schedules to be able to get away from work, and so I schedule those a year in advance. And people fly in from all over the country, and I've also done it in Norway a couple of times. And interestingly, it doesn't matter what continent you're from, men are the same. We have the same issues, and it's how do I live a centered life that allows me to be more fully the person they were meant to be.
And what do you say is the main difference between the men's program then if you were to have women in the program too?
Well, men aren't as relational as women, so a lot of men do not struggle with the fact that they don't really have a lot of friends. They're taught that they're to be self-sufficient. So part of the men's program is learning how to be able to open themselves to their four parts. So one of the ways I describe it is the four-chambered heart. Is if you connect to your heart, it should be basically the four parts. It should be strong, clear, full, and open. And a lot of men just haven't been taught that. They've been taught how to connect and feel, but not really to do it with heart and meaning in their life. So I do that in nature, and we do sweat lodges and various other things that support them to find themselves again.
Okay. One thing that I personally have experienced from your workshops is they're transformational and they're life-changing. And some of your techniques from the indigenous healing that you have gathered play a big part of it, the journeys, the energy, the everything about it. What I would like, well, I do, and the other thing is that I am going to share, because I'm amazed with your workshops, is that we've had people as far as Alaska come to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have anyone from other countries or just in the United States?
At this point, just the U.S. Let's see. I had some people from Puerto Rico before, but that's still U.S. holding. So no foreign countries except when I go over there. So when I went to Norway, there was people from various countries of Scandinavia. So that's as far as I've gotten so far.
Well, that's a great service for humanity. And I will tell you, I went to Herb's last workshop was this fall. And it's on the bear. It's on the West energy, and Herb will be talking about that tonight. But it's interesting because a friend and I didn't know she was going for sure, so she drove herself and I drove myself, and I was lost for probably in the area for a good hour. And if I could have turned around or sat or just pulled over and cried, I probably would have. But I knew that I was running out of time. I needed to get there. And then I find out my friend shows up a week beforehand. So the important thing of that is how important it is to be grounded in our body, because I was not grounded in my body.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe tonight we could talk about that at wherever you feel that that's important, because I think that a lot of us at some point in our lives have been way out of our body, and you can maybe explain what that really means. You can do it now, or we can talk about it later.
Let me give a little bit of background, which I think will help people.
Yes.
So to understand how I got to this point, and I'm at a very youthful over 60 place in my life. I was raised in I'm biracial and multinational, is what I tell people. So I'm biracial because I'm both Native American as well as Caucasian. I'm multinational because I'm Shawnee, Cherokee, as well as some German and English, Welsh. And so out of that, I was raised with a mother who was very religious. Her sanctuary literally was the church's sanctuary, and she loved to spend time there, and it just made her feel close to God. And then my father, if he wanted to talk to God, was to walk out into the woods. I tend to have a better response, the more natural approach. Even though I can go to a church and appreciate religious services and understand what they're about. But I'm out of that comes something that's totally different than most people experience. My father was a healer, so when I say healer, he literally could do a prayer and a burn would vanish. And I thought that was normal, and everybody's father did that until I got older. And so my reality of what's possible is a little bit different. And so as I grew older, and oftentimes we forget our heritage until we get older, I hit about 38 and one day realized there was something missing in my life. I'd done everything that they're supposed to do to be successful. And what I realized, I didn't really understand where I came from. And so I started embodying and learning more about my heritage. And that's when I realized, when you asked about being grounded, I had very few sensations really in my body. In other words, when you're fully grounded, and people can do this when they're sitting there, as they're sitting there listening so intently, they probably have their mental capacity at maximum level. But if they wiggle their toes and actually just feel themselves sitting in the chair that they're sitting in, or if they're standing to flex the muscles in their butt so that they actually can feel the energy, they'll notice a shift. And the shift will be an experience of suddenly feeling grounded. In other words, your feet will feel heavier. And if you shift yourself back and forth, you suddenly feel like there's, it's almost like I like to refer to a sense of coming home. We can actually do that any time, whether driving your car or anything else, if we just pay attention that whenever we get frenetic, scattered, lost, whatever your picture would be, is to do that, and what happens is you come back to yourself. And these are just some of the things I learned about as I was reclaiming my heritage of what does it mean. And my dad was forever telling me, pay attention. I had no idea what the hell that meant when I was growing up, but as I got older, I understood what he was saying, is if you pay attention to what you're paying attention to, life gets a lot simpler. If you're not paying attention to what you're paying attention to, then you're probably paying attention to a story you've told yourself about what's happening around you, and you're living the story instead of living your life. And when I had that awareness, that changed a lot of things for me. And it's what led to eventually the studying of the medicine wheel, because I was looking for something that helped me find myself. And then in doing that, realizing that there's a heritage that all of us have, because medicine wheel's been around 10,000 years, so it's affected every culture. And it doesn't matter what continent you're on. And it's a very spiritual process to lead you back to yourself. Christian version of that would be a labyrinth. There's a variation of that in the Pueblo and Zunis that call it the man in the maze. If you've ever seen the symbol, you can type that in on an internet. You realize that it's a man who's walking through a maze, which is another way of saying is it's a person who's committed to walking the spiritual life. So a lot of those things changed for me, and I guess you would call it I had an awakening. At the time, it felt like I was going absolutely insane because suddenly I was seeing things differently, and it just shifted my whole orientation. So about 20 years ago, I came across a medicine wheel and just started studying it. And out of that, I studied medicine wheels from about every continent that I could find it from. There's versions in Africa. Almost every Native American has a different version. And even Jungian psychology, if you really go all the way through what Carl Jung was doing and then later Robert Monroe has done in psychology, you realize they had studied with the Native Americans and incorporated the medicine wheel into their psychology of the human psyche. So out of all that, then, I began to realize there's principles to help us find ourselves. And so for the last 20 years, I've been pretty dedicated and committed to understanding that and then translating that for other people so that they could, in essence, live life from their own internal authority and, as I like to say, to live a life that's allowing them to be more fully themselves.
Yes, I understand that from experiencing what you do. It's, yes. So, okay, so I understand you studied all the different medicine wheels around the world. So how then did you come up with your own version of the medicine wheel?
Well, in Native tradition, you always have to study the original. Then to, and once you understand the basic concepts of what the wheels were doing, then you can do a variation. So the medicine wheel, for as many tribes as there are out there, that's probably how many wheels there are, and a lot of them were geographically based. So for some people, the north represented one thing. For example, if you're from Florida as an Indian tribe, the north would represent something different to you than somebody's in Minnesota. And so taking the geographic concepts out is how I then came up with the principles that I created that I felt were more modern, and I kept testing them. And over the last, it took me 8 years of studying the various wheels till I, 11 years came out, 11 years ago came out the version that I have now. And I think it's got various principles that are very important. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. In the east as a direction is almost universally accepted as masculine energy. It's the place of the rising sun, and almost universally it's considered masculine energy. So that would then also relate to courage. And if we're learning courage and it's our first 5 years in life, it really is teaching us from our parents and the people around us, how do we show up? And that means in day-to-day life. And some people will show up fully present. Some will show up less present because they might have come out of an environment that didn't allow them to be themselves. Or they may take on an angry, rebellious attitude because they have parents who didn't enforce the boundaries for them. And so out of that, I looked at it from the point of view of if this is what's set in the first 5 years, what is the lesson over the rest of our life, whether it be man or woman, that we need to do? And so the truth for the East, in my will, is the ability to show up and be present without preconceived notions, while being able to take action and to set boundaries. Go ahead.
No, you were good. I think you're going to give an example of what that really means.
Yeah, so 90% of the time, let's say the average person, let's say we go out on our first date. How many preconceived notions do we have about going out on the date versus just going into it with the idea of meeting somebody completely fresh and being open to them and however they really are? We have all sorts of fantasies and things going off in our minds, so it's very hard for the average person to actually show up and be present without preconceived notions. But when doing that, it's also not saying you don't show up and expose yourself. So it's also showing up by being able to take action and set boundaries. So if the date's going poorly, you excuse yourself and you go home. Or if the person makes advances too early in the situation, you set a boundary and break their hand or whatever it is that to reorient it back to the present.
Okay. So usually you're in the East mode during the time you're growing up, and that's mainly masculine. So how does that relate to a woman, a girl?
Well, the women, from a medicine wheel point of view, actually starts in the West. So their childhood starts in the West, so what they learned is to be relational. So boys learn to be individualistic and aggressive. Generally, from this point of view of the medicine wheel, they learn how to connect and feel while paying attention to what has heart and meaning. So it's not universal, but generally speaking, young girls are taught to be more relational than young boys are. And they have a tendency to have more friends, not universally, but there tends to be more of a relational aspect. So from the point of view of the medicine wheel, if we looked at it in a traditional way, that would be the feminine energy. And they learn to connect and feel from their heart.
So what do you do if you're from a dysfunctional family and you don't have anyone there that is present themselves? So then what happens to little girls and little guys? I mean, boys. What happens?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, you see that throughout the newspaper. On worst-case scenarios, you end up with kids who get into a lot of trouble. The hope is that they will eventually get a role model or some kind of support or guidance to come to a workshop. I mean, for some people, it's therapy. Therapy has actually become a process of actually reparenting for many people if they haven't been embarrassed from doing it. So dysfunctionality is part of the core of humanity. But at the same time, the medicine wheel is why it's so effective and it's transformative. It's suddenly like when you went through the workshop. It's finding yourself again. It's suddenly a door got open and says, oh, I know what that means. And you suddenly shift and you can start doing it. And so that's why I do this is in hopes of modeling for other people what's possible so that they can actually find themselves and experience themselves fully in their body.
Right. So then your workshops, then on one hand, if you, while you were growing up, got part of the where you need to be, let's say you got maybe you didn't get the West, but then you got, as a little girl, somehow you were not treated, you know, and you got the East, or vice versa for a guy, and it doesn't matter. But the point of it is that in your workshops, you help bring back, like you say, that part that you've missed.
Yeah, because, you know, I've been to workshops where there's one of the people, she was raised in a family of four brothers. So she understood the East, the masculine energy and courage, and how to set boundaries and take action, including cleaning the clock of her brothers. And what she was struggling with is the feminine, how to open her heart and be more relational. And so one of the things that I worked with her was to show her that if she would maintain eye contact with each of her kids for 1 minute a day for a month, it would change her relationship. And it did, because eventually by maintaining the eye contact, the kids got, first they start off saying, well, what's wrong with you, or what are you looking at? And the response is, you. And eventually the child's eyes soften because they actually see that the parent is being present. And in being present, it allows the child to be present, and then relationships and moments of intimacy occur. And that's a lot of what the feminine is about. It's about the past. It's not about being a wimp or highly feminine frilly. It's feminine is being open-hearted and receptive and relational and intimate, compassionate.
Yes, yes. Herb, could you speak up just a little bit louder, please? Some people are having some trouble hearing you. If you could, from the computer. I think it's easier by phone. But thank you. I know that everyone wants to hear what you have to say. Okay, so then once boys go to the East, then they go to the South. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and we probably, and let's see if there's anything else about the East you want to talk about. What's the warrior?
The East is the warrior.
What does that mean?
Well, that's the warriors. If we look at it from one side, the warrior is the person who goes to battle. But from the medicine wheel point of view, the warrior is actually closer to a samurai, which means he will go to battle and even take life if required. And he will regret when he does do so, but he also understands that there's moments of necessity that has to occur. That's another way, that was the way the old days, the way to describe it now is that the person has courage to show up and be present without preconceived notions while being able to take action and set boundaries. A warrior is just show up to life, and the majority of people in this country have never been taught how to do that.
No, they haven't. And I do want to interject something that I think is really important for people to understand. We have a lot of people that listen to the radio show on a regular basis, and you know that it's all about, you know, when the Mayan calendar ended, what are we going to do? And we've been preparing for this for a very long time, and it's all about releasing, let go. And actually, it's everything Herb is talking about at the same time and that he will continue to talk about. And so here we are, and we know it's the beginning of the year. And what happens when we find ourselves feeling inferior? We don't have the confidence. We get into our head too much, and then we think, oh, my God, we can't do this. We're supposed to be these different changed people. But the truth is that, Herb, am I correct that even though we work on being our authentic self, there has to be a balance with all of us. Is that correct? We have to be in the center.
We have to be in our center because when we're in our center, we are basically balancing and having the choice of the masculine and feminine. We also have the wisdom of the ancestors to support us, as well as an understanding that we're simultaneously creating the future.
Okay, so we and I know that part of your medicine wheel is phantoms. I didn't know if you were going to touch on those, but, you know, what is the phantom? And you can explain what that is in the East mode, because that there is a phantom in every part of the medicine wheel that could come up, correct?
Yeah, well, phantom shows up with for the warrior energy or around courage by not having any. being afraid, having a sense of inferiority. And the way that shows up oftentimes is one of two ways. Either the person can be wimpy, which is just cower away, or the individual could be rageful. So phantoms are designed to protect what is the false self, because the false self has been so wounded. But the true self, when you break through that, doesn't fall that trap. You ask a question that I've said, and a lot of people remember the old Memorex recording tape commercial. Is it Memorex? What I say is it Memorex or is it real? In other words, Memorex is our stories we tell ourselves. So something happens and we have a big reaction of either doubt or fear or inferiority, then it's likely that that's a memory. So Memorex is memory, and real is, I use the phrase, pause, reflect, and choose. So pause long enough to saying, is this a story? And the way of knowing that is this familiar? If it's a familiar reaction, then you're reacting to something in the past and not the person in front of you. So if you go through that process saying is, okay, I'm feeling a little anxiety and I'm getting ready to go into my fear response, but I'm going to hold that tension for a little bit, and suddenly it'll disappear. And you're starting to build your internal authority and break a phantom or break a shadow.
Okay, so what you said is really, really important. That, and I just got more information than I think I've heard, you know, like all of a sudden this light bulb has gone off. So when we get into feeling less than, resentful, whatever that feeling is that we know is not coming from our center, which I call love, you know, present, then if you recognize it and then say that again, what do?
Well, if you have a big reaction, you ask yourself, the first thing I ask people to do because it helps them, is to say, is this real or is this Memorex? The minute you think that, and one of the ways to know if it's Memorex is that you had a big reaction. You want to do what you've always done, which is you repeat your habitual pattern of a fear response or inferiority response. So by pause, reflecting, and choosing, you're able to say, what's real, what's not real, and then ask yourself the question, what do I really want to do in this situation versus what do I always do? And when people do pause long enough to actually ask themselves, what do they want? It's interesting. They start finding themselves.
Yes, I hope everyone, if you haven't thought about it, we are going to take a commercial break now. Please grab some paper and a pen. And just remember, the radio show can be archived at any time. And if you're not getting it all, you can go back and listen to it over and over again, because I'm sure you will pick up something new. So stay tuned. We'll come back and we will continue with the medicine wheel. And I'll see everybody in 4 minutes. And I have to find my music. Here we go. Thank you.
Sometimes it's a lesson, and sometimes it comes as a challenge. But the rhythm is always a teacher that comes to show us all that we are far more capable than we may have allowed ourselves to believe. So hold on, believer. Hold on tight to that rhythm, to the rhythm of life.
It's a boring one. You work every day from 9 to 5, scraping at the bottom and barely getting by. You've done your best, try so hard, as you look around you see you haven't gone far. When you haven't paid your taxes, rent is due. If you don't make some money, your life is through. Well, why? to the sound. If you have a chance to make an improvement, sitting on a corner won't help you do it. Did you see the error of your coming time? Don't shut yourself out, don't close your mind.
I would like to give a special thanks to Christian Anderson for his music. He does the theme song, Born to Fly, and does a beautiful job with music. Herb, before you get started on giving us some more information, I want to share a poem that Herb wrote and his healing process at some point. It is cold and lonely. It is cold and lonely inside my body. I shiver a lot, mostly from the coolness of feeling empty, like an old house that has lost its right to provide shelter for someone, anyone. It is cold and lonely inside my head. I quiver most days as I search for some place, any place, not this place, that is safe and warm like a puppy cuddled up against its mother. It is cold and lonely inside my heart. I deliver each day a part of me that can stand the light without too much fright, while knowing the right to life was short-circuited a long time ago. It is cold and lonely inside my hands. I tremble from the bones outward, having never been grounded in flesh. My flesh sufficiently to feel the power of gripping life, my life. It is cold and lonely. And you wrote this 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when you wrote it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. It was along the process of learning more about centeredness. It was a realization about if I don't claim my own internal authority, I would never be able to fully claim my right to be here. And so when I wrote that, it was a sense of realizing I was living completely outside of my own life, outside of my own body. And I'm sure quite a few people experienced that at different times in their lives. And not suicidal per se, but oftentimes people are referring to, I feel like I need to go return to the stars, or I'm not sure why I'm here. And most of the reason I think that what we fail to realize is the primary reason for being here is just to exist. A human being is in my definition, is a spirit trying to fully be embodied into a human body to experience all of the physical aspects of this life. And we can only do that if we claim our right to do so, which is then what I've been saying, which is internal authority.
Yes, I agree. That's a very heartfelt poem that you wrote. Okay, if we could go ahead and let's get back to, we talked about the East. Is there anything else you want to talk about the East? We haven't talked about the animals that represent the East.
I use the different animals because for some people they relate to it better. So when I say from the East, the warrior is one way to look at it, but I also, the animals I associate with it are the wolf and the hawk. If you look up the mythology or the symbolism of those, they reflect a sense of that type of energy. And it would take, we'd spend all night just on that if I stay there. So those are some of the, that's the way I associate it, is the wolf, hawk, or the warrior, and the warrior in the terms of a spiritual warrior who understands that there are certain things that they have to do, but they live by a code, and part of the code is to be fully present, like a samurai, and yet lightning quick to strike when life necessitates it, willing to set boundaries. If you ever watch a wolf set boundaries, it won't necessarily attack you, but they'll scare the shit out of you, which basically says back off. And so those animals can teach us a lot about those types of things. So I'd leave that sit at this point in order for us to move forward to the South.
Okay.
The South's truth is, so if the spring is from birth to about 5 years of age, the summer is the planting and growing season. So from a child point of view, it's age 6 to 35, maybe even 40. And we learn to do magic. So the magician, the sage, the shaman are often referred to in this cycle. The animals that are associated that I put with it are the cougar, mountain lion, and the raven. Now, part of it is this is a difficult because when we learn to do magic, we learn how to use our hands, we learn how to use our minds, and we literally create magic. So if you think about it, when we learn to read or we learn to write or we learn to do mathematics, it's magic. We're learning to manipulate something in our various abilities, and it's where we develop heavily our mental skills. And for some people, physical skills even as well. But it's all about creating something new or different with whatever gifts we have. So one of the things that came out of that for me was the truth about the South is the ability to analyze, assess, and contain any situation while saying what is so, when is so, without blame or judgment. And that latter part is hard, because most of us are taught judgment very early. Schools teach us right, wrong, good, bad. Churches teach the same thing. And we almost put a moral compass that's out of whack into people's minds, but just by the way we teach. And an internal truth or an internal authority says, I'll analyze, assess, and contain, which is another way of saying, is it real or is it Memorex? And then whatever I figure it out, I will say what's true. In other words, I'll describe it, but I'll do so without blame or judging another person. Now, where does that practically apply? How many of us in a relationship or at work, if somebody says something to us and it has a look or a tone to it, and we feel they've been condescending or judging? So the minute there's a negative evaluation applied to it, we're not dealing with people to people in the moment. We're back to dealing with our habitual responses to each other, which is our Memorex or our stories. So this is an area where it's very hard for us because we need to create a clear heart, but we learn to be very achievement-oriented, and if we're really supported, we start our ethical balance in life by learning respect for self and other, and other can be people, the land, animals. It's saying you have a responsibility with your magic of what you do with it, and you have a responsibility of respecting others and how they are. So it's the growing season, so it's like we planted the seeds and now we're going to water and grow it, which is, in other words, is saying it's the period that we water and grow our own person of who we're going to become.
Okay, and then what about the shadow part of the summer?
Well, the shadow part is if we've not been supported, nurtured, been around people who are more fully present, encourage us by setting boundaries about what's right and wrong in a moral or ethical fashion, several things can happen. We can fall into the trap of being highly controlling. We can also use our mental skills to be abusive, or we can be deceptive. We wear masks. We can be very judgmental. And in some situations, if we don't want to be responsible, let's say we have a very weak masculine energy, and then when we go to our summer, we've not developed it, we could be fall into a shadow of victimization, conflict avoidance.
I know myself, this seems like, because I did take two workshops with you, one with the raven and one with the cougar, so we can talk about the animals if we want to, but what came up for me a lot was being a victim. And I could see a lot in my life that I thought I'd let go of that I felt powerless. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of it was my growing up and how I was treated, and I just didn't know what to do with it. So that definitely was very strong. And I'm sure other people feel the same, you know, that they'll feel like the victim and they don't know how to get out of it.
Sure. And the thing of the South, there's a poem for this, because what I'm trying to help people understand is you know, we fall into these traps of being a victim and various other things, and that's why you is it real or is it Memorex? So if you fall into being a victim, you actually, if you pause, wiggle your toes, feel your butt, reflect for a second, saying, is this familiar or not? If it's familiar, it's an old story, and you can discard the story and start a new one. But on the other side of it, I want to balance that this is a period where we try on things. And I wrote a poem 10 years ago called The Space Between, and it's a real short one, so I'll just read this to you. It says, I have many faces, faces for work, faces for play, faces for whatever I think that I might need one. Do not be confused, for these are not masks. Masks are surreal, whereas my faces are not. They are me in all of my facets, until one day I no longer need it. Then it becomes a mask that served me well.
That is so true.
So the South is about finding the space between, which is where our true self sits. And so a lot of times people feel, when they're in this part of their life, it's easy to use the magician to create a mask that's not real, and you're doing it literally for a hidden agenda or to hide. But if we're showing up with our faces and knowing that life has different roles and therefore different faces, we're going to try these things. And oftentimes, as we mature, we realize, I don't need this face anymore. So it was a mask. It's a memory of who I was or what I needed at that time that I no longer need, and I move on. We're kind of like snakes. We shed skins continually.
Yes, we do. We do. And it's like, to me, healing's like peeling an onion. It's layer after layer after layer.
True.
Yeah. True. Yeah, it is. Definitely. That's okay. So when, okay, so you go from, for a guy, you go, you start in the East, you're learning to be a warrior. You're learning a lot of direction and so forth. And then you go to summer. And is there like a specific range of ages usually for us on these, on the directions?
Well, the one that seems to work that I've used is 0 to 5 is the spring for men. 6 to 35, maybe 40, 45, because we're getting, we age longer. We can be in the magician's role probably 45. 45 to 60, and maybe until they die, would be the West for many men. Very rarely do men in today's environment make it up to the winter or the North as far as a fully integrated self. We have very few people who are models of being fully centered and accessing all four directions. So let me give you an example of this. Women start in the West, and they learn to be relational. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but I think I can do this in a way that helps everybody. So the North for women would be the Queen, which is also the Great Mother. Now, how many of us know somebody who was precocious as a young girl and suddenly stays that way until their 20s, get married, and suddenly become the epitome of patience and a great absolute mother? They have moved fully into that great mother energy that is available to them. So it's not just a learned response, according to Jungian psychology. These are hardwired aspects of ourselves. The difference is that person tapped it, and so she moves there. So holding that the young lady is turned into a great mother and has a patience of unbelievable proportions. The young man goes to the summer and becomes a career guy, and he's a workaholic and doing all these things. And he marries somebody, and they're on opposite ends of the pole. She's being a great mother, and he may not be necessarily a great father relationally, but he's a great provider, which is one model of how our society works. As he would move to the fall, where he's becoming the relational, and he suddenly wants to truly be relational with his spouse, she's moved to the spring, where she's wanting to now make her mark in the world. She's raised her children. And that's why 45 to 55, the majority of divorces happen.
Explain more, please.
Well, she's now ready to make her mark in life and is not wanting to stay home and play house with her husband. They've not been as relational as they could have been. And the impact of it is that they grew apart because neither one of them lived in their center. Because when I say the medicine wheel, you literally are in your center. Most Eurocentric thinking is you walk the wheel, which means you walk in a circle. The real Native American and indigenous culture meaning of the medicine wheel was is you stay in the center and you walk out to each direction as you need to, but you do not walk the outer circle unless you're in a contemplative process. But as a life force, you're in the center, and I move out for 5 years into my spring, and I come back, and I go down into my summer, and I come back, but I'm always going back to my center on a continuous basis because it's from my center is my strength. It's where my true self resides.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know one time, and this is, I mean, it's still the same thing we're talking about, but it's off a little bit about I was in a group and you were discussing that in many, many, many years ago, the circle of how we went to in and out was very different. And you were describing it as that when a couple got married or joined together and they had children, that it was the grandparents that were raising the children. Can you explain that some more, please?
Well, because the grandparents, and from that point of view, would be that the grandmother would be the crone, and the grandfather has moved into a place, and you have what we perceive as two wise people. And the wisdom of them would be is that the grandparents had more patience. The parents were doing the work. So the husband was hunting and the wife was tending to the garden and doing the various other things. And there was a division of labor. So it wasn't a matter of feminism or something else. It was a matter of, it was a division of labor. And the grandparents were very, very active in the raising of children. And so they taught them values. And so that's where the patience of the two elements that are so important, because the crone, the grandmother as a crone, and that's one aspect of it. If she walked the wheel a different way or was part of the wheel a different way, she would join him as the great mother and the great father, or grandfather and grandmother, another way of where those terms actually came from. And they would be the ones that plant the seeds of the child from 0 to 5. We don't do that anymore.
Okay, so, all right, but I heard you. Okay, so you're talking the males and the females started together at the same direction? All people? No, okay.
No, because there's two ways to get to the great mother and great father. For some cultures, the way it would work is, let's say the male goes from the spring to the summer and the woman goes from the fall to the summer. So during that period, when they came together with the grandparents always being the ones who raised them, raised the grandchildren, the way the wheel functioned was different.
Okay.
And so they both learned magic, but in a different way. And so when they got to the later part of their life, they joined each other again, and this time as the elder, as the grandmother and the grandfather, and they could both be from the place of wisdom, and that was the way a lot of the cultures were. Now, that changed with Eurocentric culture. Eurocentrics did not go through the wheel that way. Eurocentric is the husband provided and the wife bore the children, and so we went the wheel. We both went clockwise instead of one direction, one the other.
Okay, all right. What percentage of women do you see get to the winter and integrate their all of themselves?
I think it's the same as men. I think it's very few. I mean, we all know of one or two grandmothers who are absolutely saints, and were the epitome of wonder and love, but I would say there's fewer than there are more, partly because we don't have the relationship with our grandparents the way we used to. People move away, so unless there's that strong need, that's part of the issue. We're out of balance. We actually don't complete the wheel. For example, a lot of men only reside in two places. They'll reside in the warrior and the magician and may stay there their whole life, which means two parts of themselves that are never developed. So they never fall into the feminine, which allows them to create compassion. And they don't go into their winter or north, which is the elder, which teaches generosity. That happens a lot if you look at some of the presidents we've had in the past. George Bush was more of a weak warrior and a warrior king is the way he would be described, but without having the full balance of the magician as well as the open hardness of the fall. some of his decisions were more about force than they were about negotiation. And so it led us to two wars.
That is true. That's very true. You know, there is just so much to this that if how can we bring it right in front of us to understand, like, what's one thing we can do from, let's say, the West? Well, we haven't really talked about the West that much yet, but just as you're talking about the different directions, I know we've talked about being centered in our body, and you've given a lot of examples, but, you know, it's like we've really got to bring this as concrete as we can so we can start stepping into this. Does that make sense?
A lot of it is catching ourselves and not telling stories anymore.
Okay.
And the stories that we tell is it real or is it Memorex? So if people just pause, reflect, and choose moment to moment of what's real and what's not, that helps. But, for example, if we move into the West, which is the fall of our life, we're now fully an adult. We're in at learning to be emotional. So the archetype can be a peacemaker, an artist, a healer, or a lover. But if it's the shadow side, it'll be the person who's addicted to sex or conquest. They're trying to connect but don't know how, so they use sex as that tool. So this is the place where it's learning to have the ability to connect and feel, but while paying attention to what has heart and meaning. Now, I'll give you an example of this. A lot of people who are professional workers will say they get into the zone at work, and that's connecting and feeling. But what they don't understand, it has nothing to do with what has heart and meaning. It means that they have somehow figured out how to master what they're good at and be very good at their job, and they feel connected and they feel good about themselves. So they obviously think, well, obviously I'm feeling and you can see it because I'm open-hearted. Well, that's not open-heartedness. That means they've connected and they feel connected to a process but not to themselves. And this is where you have to slow down. And naturally, when we get to this stage for men, we don't a lot of times don't hit it until 45. Now, it's not saying a lot of people don't have that ability. But, you know, think in your life how many people you know that you say, oh, well, you know, he's big-hearted or he's open-hearted. Well, that's a person who's got a lot of compassion and feminine energy because they come from that place. Connecting and feeling is important, but only if it has heart and meaning. But if you talk to a lot of business people, and you'd use a phrase like that, they would have no idea what you're talking about.
No, at all. Now, so the West is about nurturing yourself and being able to nurture others. Is that,
yeah.
That I mean, that's part of it.
Yeah, because, you know, the nurturing piece of it is part of it is your introspective. You actually go into yourself and you're being touched by life. So compassion isn't just compassion for others, because a lot of times when we think about compassion, modern-day society, it's more about sympathy. We feel bad for somebody else. If you empathize, you understand and can relate to their experience. And as a result, you would respond to them with a form of compassion, which is a caring container, but you're not trying to take care of them. Because when you're taking care of them, you're treating them like a child or acting as if they can't take care of themselves. And there's a drastic difference, and our society doesn't understand that. We actually like to go into, we think compassion is well, I have to do all these things for you. It's not. Actually, 90% of compassion is actually being fully present without judgment to that person. And if you can do that, you can change a person. Because that validates their existence and their experience.
And you can do that through thoughts, so just to make sure, checked in to see if you're feeling in judgment, if you're thinking of them in judgment, and get yourself centered into that compassion of that person. And you're right, they can change just by doing that.
Yeah, because you don't have to, truthfully, you're better off don't think about anything. Because you want to be a container, a vessel that just validates and holds them and just sit there, similar to what I did to you when you first met me, and you didn't know what was going on, but you knew something was going on, that shifts people because you feel validated, you feel seen, just accepted for where you are in that moment. And we have a hard time with that. We're a doing society, so if I'm not doing something for you, then there's mischief, or I'm not doing enough, and it's a lot of storytelling.
Yeah, yes, there is. So in the, okay, so let's talk more about the feminine energy of the West, because my experience also is, and you've also said it, you know, what does compassion mean? It doesn't mean you do everything for that person. But it's also as a, the feminine energy inside is to be able to give and to be able to receive, but not, and you're saying it, you know, you've already said it, but I can tell you when you give, and you feel empty inside, you're not filling yourself back up. So that the West is also about receiving and allowing others to give to you.
Yeah, there's a reciprocity there. See, the idea of giving is an interesting concept because most people do it out of attachment. And the attachment is I'm doing it because I'm supposed to, so I'm actually doing it to make myself feel better.
Okay.
So when you do, if you're fully present and you're doing for something with somebody, then you're fully present and then you're checking in and seeing what would be useful for them and trusting that they have the internal authority and wisdom to know what it is they really need. Now, I'm sure there are certain times that they can't. Somebody's injured or various other things. Yeah, you step in and you support them. But as far as most relational issues, it's just being fully present with people. And the impact of that is it literally has the capacity to change that person because they will be feel they can feel validated for the first time in their life.
Right, and yes, and that feeling validated is really crucial.
Yeah, and so the only way you can do that is without preconceived notions, without judgment. You're just fully present, and you're allowing yourself to have the ability to connect and feel. While being open-hearted.
And you, this is another really good point, is that there's so many of us, and I know I've experienced, and you probably have too, Herb, is that there are times in our lives that we don't feel supported. So the difference of what you're recommending and what a lot of people do is that someone will say, well, I support you. They give you all these reasons, but they're just not being, you know, they're still in their stuff. They're just not allowing. So there's a huge difference because when somebody is trying to validate and to tell you they support you, it still isn't what you're talking about. Because when you are truly just there in being that container for another person, you're right. And there's no judgment. That is when the miracles happen of change.
Right, because you're just fully present.
Yes.
And when we're fully present, it invites the other person to feel be fully present. And when that happens, we have an exchange of almost a soul-to-soul experience. And when you've done that, there's no words for it, but you know you're different. And truthfully, I think that's a good portion of the purpose for being on this planet, is that we're all seeking to be fully validated as human beings.
Yes.
Which is all of our spirit, soul, whatever you want to call it, inside our body, safely, and recognized for the wonderful being we are.
Yes. Yes, I agree with that completely. So the animals that you use, we talked about the spring of the wolf and the hawk, but we didn't talk about summer yet or fall animals.
Yeah, well, actually we did, because
okay.
The summer is the raven and,
yes.
And the mountain lion. The fall I use is the bear and the owl. Now, the reason for that is it's the setting sun. That's often referred to as is feminine energy, just generally associated. Bear is often associated with feminine energy, and owl is associated with feminine because going into the darkness, the bear hibernates. So it goes into the darkness every winter and comes back fresh and renewed every spring. That's one way of saying it goes into the darkness. The other symbolism of the owl is it's one of the few animals. A friend of mine calls it white silent wisdom. And the idea is it's an owl is perfectly silent and yet has the eyes that we all associate with this wisdom, and it can see into the darkness precisely and perfectly. And it brings it to life. So that's why I utilize those. And then when I teach the full wheel, because if you remember, each one of these directions is 3 full days around all the details of this, you begin to understand what it's about, because we have to go into our darkness to bring the light, to light the ability to connect and feel while paying attention to what has heart and meaning. And you do that simultaneously to the other three parts of the wheel. So if I'm fully present and I'm able to connect and feel, my masculine and feminine is in perfect balance, I will create something out of that. We often refer to masculine and feminine as male and female, and we think of sex, but what if the masculine and feminine of ourself came together in a perfect balance?
Yes, spirit shows me that it is passion with yourself. It is just you're lined up. It's just magic at that moment.
Right. That's why the interesting part of it is a lot of times when masculine and feminine over the years in spiritual teachings is in balance, it refers to a healing process, a miracle, a transformation. Well, if you look at the symbol of the caduceus for the medical field, it is 2 entwined snakes, what represented the intertwining imbalance of masculine and feminine energy. Which is the ultimate symbol of healing. And so the problem with Western medicine is actually we cure symptoms. We don't necessarily heal the person or the soul. And that will be a problem until Western medicine and Eastern medicines continue to integrate further. But we're getting a lot further. There's more integration than there's ever been. So we're making progress.
Can you talk a little bit about the shadow parts of the west direction?
A lot of times the shadow part of the west comes out as you can get a lot of addictive acts or alienation and separation. Alienation and separation, if I can't connect and feel, or every time I get close to doing it, my memory comes back up about trying to connecting to an abusive parent, whether it be physical, emotional, or otherwise. And so safety becomes, and anytime something gets close, I need to separate and alienate myself quickly because it's not safe. Addictive behaviors is trying to feel loved and never having quite got that. And so utilizing a masculine energy in a feminine way is somebody who does addictive acts, sexual acts, and things of that nature, whether male or female. This is somebody that has to go out and engage in sex on a regular basis. No relational attachment, just out there on all the time. Now, there is a period when you're younger, you're experimenting and learning about your body and learning about relationships, that a lot of people, saying goes in the rural areas is they're out seeding their wild oats. Well, it's actually not an accurate statement because both men and women do that. But I'm talking about the person who can't break that. It can't be in relationship. So the shadow side of that can be that type of behavior. And it's similar to also if it's tied to the magician, as well as the lover healer energy, then it could end up being abusive, power aware, mass judgmental. So that's the shadow side of those.
Yeah, I know that I've experienced it all. I think we all have, you know, because we just aren't born to have in the center. You know, it's like life is the journey of getting to the center for sure.
I think that's true. I think it what we end up doing is we come in with a series of experiences, and we're not really skilled in humanity to stay in our centers. So if you want to look at being a human being as a spiritual path, we come in and we're separated from our center, and then the goal is that we eventually return to it. And a lot of spiritual practices, you weren't allowed to even think of studying spiritual things until you're at least 40, because you had to have enough life experience to have something to work on so that you had a path by which to get back to your center. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. And for me, it's a daily process I think everybody has to go through. But if once we start practicing being more centered and understanding these principles, we suddenly realize one day we're doing it. We're in a conversation where we normally would respond with rage or something else, and we don't. We realize, oh, normally that's what I would do, and they do something else. And that's when the internal authority has starting to grow and give you choices, again, to create a different life than you have. Now, is it going to make it perfect? No. Is it going to create nirvana? Probably not. But can you get to a place of occasional joy and a lot of day-to-day contentment? Absolutely.
Yes, yes, we can. And there again, I think that that's what this is all about, is to even become more aware and to, as we keep moving forward and raising our energy and vibration, the more we can master the medicine wheel principles, we truly can get through life. So you've got the heavens, you've got the earth, and you have you, the soul, you know. So it's a perfect match. We're going to take one more break.
Okay.
And we will be back in 4 minutes. I will see everybody then, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the north, and we have some more things to share. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. USC Radio Productions is a catalyst for humanity's shift from human nature to divine greatness through both the spoken word and our hosts sharing compelling and exciting topics to create a greater understanding of the subject and how it relates to our world today. Whether our hosts are speaking at conferences to worldwide audiences, organizing live global events, or presenting unique, life-changing, empowering knowledge, our mission has always remained at the forefront of our minds and in our hearts, to create opportunities for all to claim their empowerment, stand in unity, and to meet the greater parts of themselves and each other. This is our heart calling. You are our calling. At the most pivotal time in our human evolution, we are deeply inspired to continue to meet the needs of humanity and our planet as we birth into empowered greatness. It is our fervent hope and intention that our shows will serve as both a guiding light and trusted resource. Visit us at uscnetwork.ning.com. The time has arrived to claim your greatness and be the voice of your heart.
Join host Susan Newton every Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the USC radio show Living in the Light. Empowerment occurs as you open your heart and reconnect to your higher self and unconditional love. Discover how to reunite as a whole through the light of spirit and the love of God. Log on to www.blessingsfromspirit.com and choose to empower yourself. Schedule group or individual sessions with author, medium, and interactive verbal channel Susan Newton and guided meditation specialist Chris Salomon. Their products and services will facilitate your reconnection to the whole as you open your heart and experience unconditional love. Log on to www.angelsnownetwork.com and unite as a whole with all that is. Register to attend an Angels Now event with Susan Newton, Chris Salomon, Cindy and Michael Fess, and Candy Michelle. Your Angels Now team is here to serve you. This group of authors, mediums, psychic facilitators, Reiki masters, musicians, and guided meditation specialists will share spiritual insights, wisdom, and truths from the spiritual realms.
Advertise with us and receive worldwide visibility. The USC TV Radio Productions is fast becoming one of the leading producers and distributors of online high-quality talk TV radio shows in partnership with our professional hosts, targeting a worldwide listening audience via the Internet based on a diverse range of topics. The USC TV Radio Productions has introduced new personalities, products, and programs to a rapidly ever-expanding online audience, becoming one of the true spiritual communities in the world. Our shows with the TV Radio Productions are 95% live-based on a weekly broadcast. Advertising on Internet radio is the wave of the future and is a virtually untapped market of customers for your business. Now there is a way to target your special interest group worldwide without paying for high-volume exposure. With our TV radio network and web advertising, you pay small market rates that often will equal or even exceed the useful exposure your business would get on a large market station or even network. To inquire about our special price point and advertising packages we offer, call 480-255-6198 or email us at imdivinelight@aol.com.
Welcome back to Celebrate You with guest Herb. Before we get started again, I'd like to share just a little bit about next week on the 16th. We're going to have Deborah Kay. She is an intuitive. She does healing. She does readings. And she has a program, a teleseminar for people. It's called The Power 10. And then on the 23rd of January, we have Dr. D. Everybody that listens to USC Radio knows that Dr. D has her own radio show. She is like off the charts. She's awesome. So make sure you tune in for the next few weeks and, of course, every Wednesday. Herb, I have a couple things I want to read about Native American Code of Ethics. I just want to share before we get into the North Direction. Search for yourself by yourself. Do not allow others to make your path for you. It is your road and yours alone. Others may walk it with you, but no one can walk it for you. Rise with the sun to pray. Pray alone. Pray often. The Great Spirit will listen if you only speak. Be truthful at all times. Honesty is the test of one's will within this universe. Be true to yourself first. You cannot nurture and help others if you cannot nurture and help yourself. So those are just a few things. I have a list of 20 code of ethics that I did receive from you. It's just really good. It just helps people to find a way to live, to get through life, but to really enjoy life and be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it does. I want to go to the north, and then I would like to save a little bit of time to get your opinion, or not your opinion, but your experience with the Mayan calendar coming to an end and what you think that really means.
Okay.
All right. So if we could now please go to the winter, let's talk more about what that means.
Well, the winter is the north, and it's the ancestors. So one way to describe the north and the south is the north is the seven generations prior to us, and the summer often represents the seven generations, the future of us. And I'm going to talk about the balance first, and then I'll go into the north a little more. When we're growing and a lot of behavior things, we plant seeds that impact people for up to seven generations. So that's how we pass a lot of things on to our own children. And they pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. And that's now in psychology been proven to be actually true, that when family dynamics occur, something that they've tracked it back, that by the seventh generation, something that was still in the system that was dysfunctional or harmful, the impact of it will eventually leave the system after seven generations. So out of that, it's bringing now the masculine and feminine balance in the center, and the north and south bring the past and the future together, and saying the point of power is in the present, which means each of us has the power to impact ourselves and everybody around us. So with that, the north brings us into a place where we begin to have wisdom, because we learn to initiate, support, and create order while being open to outcome. Now, how many times have people given us some nondescript advice that at first didn't make any sense, but we kept struggling with it until suddenly we had an epiphany of what was going on? In today's environment, CEOs are often referred to as the equivalent of the North, but it's rarely as a CEO truly acting out of the kingly energy of the North. They're actually functioning mostly today out of the warrior energy, where they force a direction and they are very attached to the outcome. But some of the great leaders that are out there in various businesses and stuff have come to realize, I can guide and direct and I can provide you advice, but I need to give you the freedom to create and be yourself. So we have to create guidelines, so to speak. So that's the idea of initiate, support, and create order while being open to outcome. It's a place of the spiritual. It's also a generative place that has also generosity. So if we go back to what we were talking about earlier, the grandparents were the ones who came out of the North, represented they were generative by supporting the children to grow and nurture their internal authority. One of the problems that was a big struggle in this country when we basically conquered the land and were trying to integrate Native Americans, what they didn't understand is you couldn't deny the internal authority of the Native Americans. They, just because somebody of authority told you had to do something, didn't mean it was right and didn't mean you had to follow it. And our country didn't understand that. And so that's when they did a lot of things, separate the children from their parents and force them into boarding schools and try to force assimilation onto the situation. Well, it literally was just a completely cultural, if not a genetic, difference. And so when you look at it from the point of view of the ancestors and from the North, it's basically saying that the North creates a healing force to be present that supports all of those coming after them to be centered, whole, and trying to live from a place of being fully present who they are.
So what is king energy and queen energy exactly? I mean, I can tell you what I think king energy is and queen just by the words, but you're saying the king and queen is everything you're talking about. But
yes.
But can you give more? Please explain that more.
We have a lot of stories of bad kings and queens. They were ruthless, tyrannical, etc. And they were either living out of their shadows or their phantoms. But a truly strong, centered individual who's now tapped into their king energy. I'm going to give two examples. How many times have you met a five-year-old and you look at him and say, that's an old soul?
Yes, or a newborn.
And we don't know why, but we just know it. There's a wisdom there. So the kingly energy, we know what it looks like even in a child. And so the kingly or queenly, however you wish to look at it, is the person who comes from a fully self-aware, centered place, full of compassion, understands magic, has a responsibility, and they have the courage to actually show up every day and face life and face themselves. And so if you've ever been touched by the people that as they get older, they have that piercing look of absolute presence, and oftentimes it's confusing because you feel like simultaneously they have just pierced your soul by looking deep inside you and at the same time did it with an open heart.
Right.
That is what I'm talking about from a kingly energy. It's not a power-based issue. Because the medicine wheel is power. None of the positions are power. Your eccentric thinking is, I have power if I'm a warrior and I can force you away or kill you, or if I can outthink you, or I can connect and feel in such a way that I can manipulate you. That is not actually power. That's called force. And our society confused that completely. But the native population didn't. Power is the capacity of full presence. And in experiencing the full presence, you understand the beauty of the universe. You understand the power of a river to be forceful and change all sorts of things and can sustain us with life by providing water. And at the same time, it can destroy things. So we just have a completely different point of view of what power is. And the way I like to describe it is true power is completely centered individual. By their sheer presence, they will change you.
Wow, that's that's something that I think we all should strive for, because that definitely would make the world a better place. You've used the word phantom and shadow. What's are they the same?
No, a phantom is they're similar in one respect. They're a false self that we've created for protection, so when we don't feel safe. So a phantom is an aggressive behavior that's out in front of us. So when we talk about phantoms, you know, we see these things, they could whisk by us and they're out in front of us, but you can never really see them and they scare you. Some people might refer to them as banshees.
Yes.
Okay. So it's we throw this phantom part of ourselves out to scare you away. Well, one way we can do it is rage. That's the most common one that is a phantom is used, because, you know, the old stage is poke a tyrant and find a wimp, poke a wimp and find a tyrant. Those are shadow and phantom versions. So the tyrant who's out there that is a false self is they're being puffy, aggressive to keep you away from them so that they can't be hurt. A shadow is a hide behind myself so you can't really find the real me. And so oftentimes you experience them as a person who's airheads, dissociated, deflective. They're so afraid of being their body, they're hiding behind it.
Huh. If somebody's a bully, are they a phantom? That's a phantom,
yeah,
if you're a bully.
It's a phantom energy. It's an aggressive energy that they're pushing out there to prevent from getting fully into it. Because we've seen enough of these situations where something finally touches a bully and you finally realize there's a reason that person is doing it. And they don't want to do it, but they don't know how else to protect themselves. But you have to break that defensive mechanism somehow, or what I would prefer to say instead of break it, is you have to create a container that allows it to melt so they realize they don't have to have it.
Oh, okay. And, okay, so if I'm around somebody that has bully energy, I just really just need to have a container of discernment and be.
Yeah, because if a bully is expecting you to be aggressive, and they want you to victimize yourself, which is to cower to them, which will reinforce it. But if somebody actually stands up in a way that's very powerful, not necessarily through force, they don't know what to do about it.
That is true. Okay, so then the animals of the north are what animals?
The buffalo is what I use most of the time, and then the eagle. Sometimes I'll say the polar bear as well, because the polar bear was considered the original shaman, is the original entity that walked between the animal and the human world. In fact, a lot of people, when they would be confused in the Arctic areas or Antarctic areas, because the polar bear, they would get up on his hind legs, and it was like it was a human being, and a lot of mythology around it. But I generally use in our society, I use the buffalo because the power in it had a strong ties to the ancestors. And then the eagle, and people use various versions depending on part of the country, but the eagle was considered a messenger to the spirit world, to heavens, to gods, however you wish to phrase it. And but there's a wisdom to both of those animals. There's just a feel and an archaic, ancient wisdom to them. And that's the symbolism that goes with it. And then if you go into the idea of the elder, the king, queen, sovereign, often other phrases are used, is the great father, great mother. But they're depicting true wisdom. It's a person who's so comfortable in themselves, they don't have to prove anything to anybody else.
Whoa. Yeah. That would be the way to be.
Yeah, and we're striving, I think, to get there. We just don't know how yet.
What do you think happened? I mean, the indigenous cultures have had the secret. And I know secret is not the best way to say it. It's not a secret. But they had the answer. And you're showing it, and this is something that's been around thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So what happened? Where did it go?
I don't know. Eve ate the apple, I guess. I don't know. We got conscious awareness at different levels and different populations, and I really don't know. Maybe that's part of the human experience. Is we have to destroy our own salvation so that we can rediscover it one day. It's an interesting process because right now there's a very controversial study just came out from Stanford that says that the average IQ in the United States is declining.
Declining?
Yes.
And why is that?
I don't think they know yet, but the actual test that they've measured it over the years is actually shows it's declining. So it says the educational system is failing. I think the parenting process is failing. We do not have good role models to mirror and imprint the children to grow and to learn. And we use more force than power. If we had more presence in the average home, there would probably be a lot less problems.
Yes, yes. And I think it's really saddened that a lot of the Indian reservations even, I mean, they've lost their foundation. Am I correct?
A certain respect, but a lot of them have realized they had to take control of it. So, you know, a lot of people criticize them for the gambling casinos, and the bigoted statement is now you just have wealthy drunk Indians. And there's a lot of that still being said. But the truth of the matter is they took over what was promised to them by having that. People are working. They do have money. But more importantly, they've built their own schools. They've built health care. They've built various infrastructures to help the people to grow. And they built their own college system that incorporates both the native ways as well as the Western ways so that you have a cross-cultural kids, and the impact of it is graduation rates are going up for Native Americans. More are going to college and postgraduate work, and just needed a chance, but it had to be a fair chance of an opportunity to excel.
Yes, I agree. Can you share a little bit about what you think the Mayan calendar ending, what that really meant?
Well, my experience of 2007 through 2011 was a lot of things for people came up. Memories, understanding came up about different things, and some of it was so powerful we weren't able to deal with it. But I think a lot of people got a clear picture of themselves, and some of it they didn't like. 2012 was the integrative phase of the Mayan calendar. And the number of people I know that came to my workshops and the number increased who came to it, the wheel gave them an integrated process. Suddenly, they understood themselves differently. and allowed them to be a different person in how they function in the world. One way of looking at it from my encounter point of view is their conscious awareness went to a higher dimension. So they are different. And I think the belief was that there would be enough people go to a higher level that a new dimension of consciousness would slowly begin to seep into the existing world and hopefully end a lot of the genocides, because we've had genocide throughout the world at least the last 200 years, if not thousands of years. Someplace there's another tribe trying to destroy it. Just a lot of craziness that's going on, and I think it will probably, I'm not sure what 13 is supposed to be from the Mayan calendar, but my guess is we'll continue to have integration, which means there will be continued reflections back on who we are and what we are really doing, revealing that the stories we've been telling ourselves have been nothing but a fabrication.
I agree with you 100% on that, and I believe that 2013 will continue that, and the energy, because the vibration is changing, could intensify. So it's like these stories are going to hit us in our face, and when are we going to change them?
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do? And the time is absolutely now. And I am a believer that we really need to know how to live on Earth. And in that third dimensional world, which in the native eyes there's a lot of different ways to say it, but you see with a soft eye, you know, it's not always the way you think it is. Right. And you allow the animals and you allow the energy around you to really guide you. And I believe that we need that more than ever. If you are a spiritual person and you're metaphysical, you've got to be grounded and this energy, because this is, we're on this planet. You know, you can't be out of your body and get to everything you want to be. Would you? Yeah, you have to be centered. So I believe in the heavens and the angels and the guides and so forth and the indigenous ways and going to the fifth dimension, because we are multidimensional beings, that we need it all. We need a perfect balance in our life. And it doesn't mean to be perfect. It just means we need to become aware. And that's what you said tonight. You know, it's becoming more aware. And once you become more aware, you're able to shift a lot faster.
True. And when you become aware, then you can see where you've created your own fears, your own ghosts that prevent you from moving forward. And it's difficult because we're so habitualized around many of our fears as confining ways to prevent us from being unsafe or hurt or raise other things. And those who show up at my workshops suddenly don't know why, but they know they better be there.
Yes.
And after they get there, they know why they were supposed to be there. And I think that's where divine guidance of some sort, some wisdom internal to themselves. It doesn't matter to me how it is, but that's happened 90% of the time of who comes to the workshop.
You know, and I haven't said a lot about your workshops because they fill up so quickly that I don't want to get anybody's hopes up that we have one in March and it's already full.
Yeah, it's been full since July.
But you have one in you have one at the end of this month. You have one in 2 weeks.
I have one in Wisconsin. I think there's about 4 spots left open in that one. It's the Owl Medicine. So it would be, actually, the North.
The West.
Or no, the West, yeah. Feminine energy. So, yeah, be the West.
Yes. Yeah, so would you please give us your website again?
It's onewhitehorsestanding.com.
Just spell it out, one.
Uh-huh. O-N-E. White, W-H-I-T-E, horse, H-O-R-S-E, standing, STANDING.com, all one word. And you can, it's up in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. And it's a very close community. So once you go, people, you feel like they're your best friends forever. And that's what happens when people are present. they can allow somebody else in new and not feel threatened.
Yes, yes, I agree. And it's amazing that a lot of the people in Wisconsin just keep coming back and coming back. And here, a couple years ago, and here or last year, I was new, and I just felt like I was welcomed in the circle, and it was a very memorable experience. You know, if this is something else, and that I know I've hit upon it, but I really want to press upon this, that if we go around life and we don't go back into the center and go east, west, south, north, whatever it is we're doing, and we have fear, that fear holds us back from a life of everything we want. Because when we're in that state of fear, then we're not allowing things to happen for us. We're now allowing the magic of life to work for us. We truly block it. So if you're wanting something that you don't have in your life, or if there's something you would rather shift to or open up to, or things aren't happening, you've really got to look to see, why isn't it happening? And if you can go back to the principles of how to move and how to maneuver it, of the third dimension, of the native way, it doesn't mean to be stuck in fear, because third dimension can be fear. You know, the way we perceive it is really not the truth. And that you've said that over and over again. It's a story, right, Herb? That a lot of times it's just a story.
Yeah, it's a story.
It's just what we tell ourselves. We have just a few seconds. How would you like to, anything you want to sum up before we go off the air tonight?
I'm just going to read a brief poem. I think it'll summarize everything. I wrote this about 25 years ago. It's called Mirrors. Sometimes I look into a mirror and see 1,000 faces. Some are new, not here, yesterday, nor this day, till now. Some shimmer with newness while tarnished with despair. Some glimmer with hope while trying to lighten the wear. Some are old, buried deep in the furrows of my brows. Others are cold, frozen amongst the growing scowls. A few shade the face, sunken in the darkened eyes. Others are pulled taut from some broken ties. I sometimes wonder, where am I amongst these reflections? Do I see one tiny face bursting with emotion, spent but not released? And curiously chuckle as thoughts scamper around a childhood lesson of holding on too long and being forced to let Mother Nature run her course. Sometimes I look into a face and see 1,000 mirrors.
That is so true. Oh,
wait.
Before we go, we have somebody that wants to make a comment or ask a question.
Sure.
Okay, area code 614. Where are you calling from?
Columbus, Ohio.
And who is this?
Kathy McGranahan.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Herb. I wanted to thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom and bringing to light for people who might listen to Judy's show and know that we can make a change and be present and change our reality to what it needs to be for us in the correct moment in time. And I wanted to thank you for that.
Very well. Thank you. I appreciate your comment.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks for listening.
Kathy, sure. tell me, how was Herb's workshop on crystals? Because I missed that one.
Fantabulousness.
we didn't even get to talk about stones tonight. We ran out of time. Well, I mean, we just barely got to what all this is about, you know? There's so much more.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, I know that the stones, the crystals really touch close to you, your heart.
Yes, thank you. His workshops were very empowering in helping you to hear your own inner voice and connect with the crystals in a way that is unique to each person.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Herb, I want to thank you tonight from the bottom of my heart. I hope you come back. And it means a lot. You've given a lot of people a lot of good information.
Excellent. Well, thank you, and may everybody live from their center so we can change the world.
Yes. Amen. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
One day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true, because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly. We were born to fly. So was I. I ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly. Then we were born to fly. So was I. But when you live in a world that tells you that you can't, and when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are,